Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. The tax deadline is approaching. Take a small action for your future and talk to your financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Neil Gourmet Magat Fishin. Now, listener, we've covered vaping on this program before, but I urge you, I plead with you to have a listen to this, because a North Belfast mother has opened up about how her young daughter was recently admitted to ICU and put in an induced coma after she'd been vaping. Mary Griffin and her 12-year-old daughter, Sarah, now want to raise awareness of the potential dangers of young people vaping, and they've been sharing their story in support of a new awareness campaign by the charity Northern Ireland Chest, Heart and Stroke, amid concerns about the number of young people choosing to vape and the misconceptions often associated with vaping. And I'm pleased to say Mary Griffin joins me now. Mary, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
My goodness, you and your family and poor Sarah have been through an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, it's horrendous. No words can describe it.
Before we get into the detail of it, Mary, about what happened last month, tell me about your daughter, Sarah. She's the second eldest, I believe, in your family.
She is, yes. She's 12. Lively. Life and soul of the party. Kind. Generous. Just a lovable wee girl with a bit of cheek.
yeah, good, which is good. And she started vaping, was it long ago?
Believe it or not, I first caught her vaping when she was, I think, 10. Mm-hmm. She was hanging about with an older girl this particular day, and the girl had given it to her. Obviously, when I found out, someone actually came and told me.
Mm-hmm. And when you say you caught her, it seems like you weren't happy, obviously.
No, certainly not. She got grounded. She got her phone took off her. You know, she wasn't allowed pocket money. Mm-hmm. She wasn't allowed back near this particular girl. And then it was a long time before she tried it again. It was more when she started big school.
Mm-hmm. So she she started at 10, so grounded, off it for a while, and maybe gone but in and out of it, let's say. So let me bring you to last month then. Tell people what happened.
Well, last month, it was around about the 9th of September or so. Sarah had been staying at a friend's that weekend. She came home on the Sunday. And she had a bit of a cough, nothing too alarming, and her chest was a bit wheezy. So I gave her a nebulizer and told her to take her inhalers, and she went to bed. She was up all night coughing. That's not unusual for Sarah at this time of year.
She has asthma, doesn't she?
She had mild, very mild asthma. It was controlled just through the doctors, you know, but mm-hmm. there was the odd time around about this time of year, if I had to take her to the hospital because she had a chest infection or, you know, needed just the nebulizer just to help her clear it up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, this time around, we thought exactly the same thing. I gave her the nebulizer at home, gave her inhalers on the Sunday night. On the Monday morning, she got up for school and she said she didn't feel great. Could she go back to bed? So Sarah went back to bed and I got the two younger children ready. And I said to Sarah, just getting these two to school and I'll be straight back. I think we got about 20 yards down the street from the house when she rang back asking, she rang, "Mummy, can you come back?" So we just turned on our heels, come home again. And at this stage, she was coughing again. And I checked her for temperature. Again, it just seemed like a heavy cold.
Now, what was she complaining of? The coughing and a headache, is that it?
Not even a headache, literally coughing. Her throat was sore, but she said it was from coughing. So I actually tested her for COVID. Mm-hmm. And I gave her inhalers and nebulizer again, and I gave her some paracetamol because she had said her throat was sore. And then she seemed to settle for a while. So I was just downstairs just doing wee bits of housework and stuff and saying to the other two children. And Sarah seemed to go to sleep for a while and then she was up coughing again. But we've done it again, the inhalers and the nebulizer. And I says, "Look, you seem okay now, I'm going to run to the shop quickly and I'll be back. I wasn't gone that long when Sarah rang me. Barely able to breathe, barely able to talk, saying, Mummy, I need a doctor or a hospital. And I said, I'll be there in 2 seconds. I was literally a few doors down from her house. And I rang her daddy and I says, look, are you about? Sarah needs to get to the hospital. So he came and he took Sarah and the youngest wee boy, Jade, at 6, to the hospital with them. And naturally we thought, right, nebulizer, should be home in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
They weren't gone that long when Sarah sent me a text message to say her vitals were done and her oxygen was low. Think I'll be here a while.
So she knew something was wrong. She knew herself that it wasn't right.
Yeah, she knew something wasn't right. But again, she thought it was the same kind of thing that she had been through. She'll be there maybe for a wee while longer, getting the nebulizer on her and getting some inhalers to make sure that the inhalers were being taken in, you know.
And once she entered the hospital, they were asking about her lifestyle and what she does socially and so on.
Yes, they were asking her daddy. I was on my way to the hospital. I was just getting the wee girl, seeing she and her older brother. And they got there and say they'd done the vitals, the oxygen was low. And next thing, their daddy was on the phone to me saying, right, where are you? You need to hurry up. She's in recess. So, of course, I panicked. And then I got a message from Sarah saying, Mummy, I don't want to die without you. And at that stage, I was just like, this isn't real. This isn't. And then text her, don't worry, I'm on my way.
And Mary, and just I just cannot imagine what it's like to receive a text like that from your
exactly,
daughter. And it's
exactly
the speed. What struck me about reading your daughter's case, it's the speed of deterioration in the hospital. Can you describe that to people?
Yeah, well, when I got there, Sarah had the oxygen on her and they had her sitting kind of up on the trolley. But she was complaining, lying down on it, was too sore. Sarah's very petite. And she had like all the wires and stuff coming out. And as I got into the room, I went over to Sarah and gave her a hug, told her everything's going to be okay, although I wasn't sure. I spoke with the doctors. They showed me her x-ray. And one of the lungs just was completely fine. That wasn't working. And they explained the other one then was basically trying to do the work of two lungs. And this is where Sarah was struggling then, because they couldn't get her oxygen levels up. And
she was struggling for breath, Mary, was she?
She was struggling for breath, yeah. And she was kind of fighting it as well because she didn't like the mask on her face. At this point, she was kind of not drifting into consciousness, but she was losing a bit of grip on what was going on. I looked at her daddy. Her daddy was crying. Her wee brother was like, what's happening?
She was hours in intensive care.
Yeah, they rushed her to, basically from the resus room. They said, look, she needs 24-hour care. She needs to go to ICU. And I actually got on the trolley with her and put her between my legs with her head against my chest so that the bed wasn't hurting her.
Yeah.
And literally, they says, give us a half an hour while we'll get her settled and stuff. We waited 4.5 hours. At that point, I thought she was dead.
Oh my God.
I knew something wasn't right. They're taking too long. And when they finally came and got us, it was just, I was like, sorry, it was a nightmare seeing her like that.
Take your time. Absolutely
horrendous.
Take your time for a second, Mary, because what you're describing is traumatic. It's traumatic for you and your family, because you were genuinely of the belief that she could have been gone. Isn't that right?
Yeah. She was that close. Yeah. They let me go see her. Let us go see her. After they got her sort of settled, and they explained that it was about getting her levels right, because they were getting maybe the oxygen level balanced and maybe her blood pressure was coming down, or they got the blood pressure sorted and something else might have crashed a bit. So it was just that's why it took them so long. So they had her in the ventilator. They had her in all sorts of tubes, wires. You don't want to see anyone like that, let alone your child.
Yeah. And then they broach with you inducing a coma.
Yeah. Yeah. They said basically that was the only thing that they could do for Sarah, to try and let her lungs recuperate.
And you had to consent to that with your husband, did you?
Yeah. It was basically just, they're the doctors and you just have to put your faith in them.
Yeah, yeah. And what happened then? Once she was induced and she was in a coma, how long did that take?
She was in the coma for 4 days. During those days, the doctors and nurses worked round the clock with her. Physiotherapy's coming, trying to work on her lungs. Even while she was in the coma, you know, they're constantly coming around doing different things, running all sorts of tests. And the doctor just basically explained that there was an infection. There was asthma and the vapes. And basically the vapes have left her where she wasn't strong enough to fight off anything that was happening.
And they mentioned the vapes as part of all of this.
Yeah, the vapes played a very big part in it. Very big part in it.
And come here to me, in that 4 days, 4+ days, what a torturous wait for you and your family. What were your siblings asking about? I mean, were they must have been asking.
The two younger ones were just constantly asking, is she going to die? Is she going to come home? Will they see her again? When can they see her? And I'm trying to tell them that she's going to be fine. And in my heart, I didn't feel what I was telling them was what I actually felt in my heart. I really thought we had lost her. I really thought we were going to lose her.
I'm sorry you have to go through the traumatic detail of it again, Mary, because it's
putting the story out.
And that's the whole reason you're talking to us, and it's so good of you. But it's also recent and raw for you as well. Like, I can totally understand that.
It is.
How is Sarah now?
Sarah's doing very well. She will need, she has an asthma plan put in place for her, which she'll have to use throughout her life. She's got new inhalers. She will attend the difficult asthma clinic. She's now a high-risk patient for the rest of her life. Her lungs will never completely work again at full capacity. And she's only 12. It has changed her life. It's changed her life. It's changed our life in the way that we have to plan things now. And beforehand, it was like, right, if you got your inhaler, and that would have been it. You know, no big deal kind of thing, in the sense of, do you normally take a couple of puffs around the hiller and everything's right as rain?
Yeah.
It's no longer the case anymore. Everywhere she goes, she has to carry it.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? But on the other side, I'm sure you and her daddy will say, thank God she's with us. Thank God she is with us.
Yes. Yes, thank God. The staff were amazing. The doctors, the nurses, right through to everyone. Even the auxiliary, the cleaners and all, they were all amazing. All amazing. And Sarah, literally within, after the fourth day, Sarah just seemed to do like a complete U-turn. And she was just on the up. And we were so thankful, so lucky. So lucky, because there was also the side effects of, obviously, with the lack of oxygen. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear people ending up with brain damage and things, even with lack of it, you know, so everything goes through your head.
Yeah.
Everything. You know.
Look, she's fully behind you doing, contributing and being part of this awareness campaign with the charity Northern Ireland Chest, Heart and Stroke, I'm sure.
She is. She's been a superstar. She's received some amazing comments, and she's received some really horrible, but she's still going, and she still wants to get her story out there. You know, well, a lot of
forget, let her forget the horrible comments.
Yes.
Because what she and what you and what the family is doing is, you're making people really, really take note, I think, here with your story. What would she say to any young person, do you think? What would you say to any young person?
Don't even think about it. Don't even threaten anyone, peer pressure, anything. Just think of Sarah's story. Just, it could be anyone. You hear things all the time. You'll go, it'll never happen to us. You know, it's hard to explain. They're so easy to come across now too. But just don't do it. Even as an adult, I wouldn't even recommend them. That's just,
don't do it as a message. And if you know somebody who's vaping, we'll podcast this. Get them to listen to it. Put it on as a family. Yeah. That's our plea, I suppose. Look, will you send our love to Sarah and tell her thank you very much indeed on our behalf for allowing you to talk and recount her experience, and may she go from strength to strength. And Mary Griffin, thank you so much for joining us in the programme. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Bye.